claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I think we may have sorted out, Mike Whitney in particular, exactly what's going on with Ukraine, a deliberate provocation of Russia to impose sanctions affecting Nord Stream 2. I shall explain momentarily in a masterful article published on UNZ Review, UNZ Review, by Mike Whitney and now republished in Global Research. Meanwhile, Putin, of course, declared a special military operation in Ukraine. Explosions have been reported in multiple Ukrainian cities. Biden to announce further consequences to Russia. That turns out to be the key. Russian President Vladimir Putin announced his special military operation back on Thursday. It's been proceeding fairly effectively in the meanwhile ever since. It's intended to protect civilians and demilitarize Ukraine, a response to threats coming from Ukraine, whereas I previously reported Blackwater was there and attacking the Donbass and Lugansk areas in order to stir things up, which is why they were talking about the false flag. If the Russians report what Blackwater is doing there, then the United States is going to declare it's a fake news report, that it's all fabricated to justify the incursion. Putin said Russia does not plan to occupy Ukraine and said Ukrainian military should immediately lay down its arms. Importantly, he also observed that any foreign attempt to interfere with Russia's action will trigger an immediate reaction from Russia, which will lead to consequences they have not seen before. That seems to me to be extremely important in the calculus of what's taking place here, where various of the European nations are sending weapons and forms of support, but not military forces, to Ukraine. But this all appears to be completely manufactured. Get this, Mike Whitney. The crisis in Ukraine is not about Ukraine. It's about Germany. He begins with a quote from George Friedman, Stratfor CEO at the Chicago Council on Foreign Affairs. And by the way, I've published this article on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. The primordial interest of the United States, over which for centuries we have fought wars, the First, the Second, and Cold Wars, has been the relationship between Germany and Russia, because united there, they're the only force that could threaten us, and to make sure that that doesn't happen. George Friedman. The Ukrainian crisis has nothing to do with Ukraine. It's about Germany, and in particular, a pipeline that connects Germany to Russia called Nord Stream 2. Washington sees the pipeline as a threat to its primacy in Europe and has tried to sabotage the project at every turn. Even so, Nord Stream has pushed ahead and is now fully operational and ready to go. Once German regulators provide the final certification, the gas deliveries will begin. German homeowners and business will have a reliable source of clean and inexpensive energy that they can count on And Russia will see a significant boost to its gas revenues. It's a win-win for both parties. The U.S. foreign policy establishment, however, is not happy about these developments. They don't want Germany to become more dependent on Russian gas because commerce builds trust, and trust leads to the expansion of trade. As relations grow warmer, more trade barriers are lifted, regulations are eased, travel and tourism increase, and a new security architecture evolves. In a world where Germany and Russia are friends and trading partners, there is no need for U.S. military bases, no need for expensive U.S.-made weapons and missile systems, and no need for NATO. I repeat, in a world where Germany and Russia are friends and trading partners, there is no need for U.S. military bases, no need for expensive U.S.-made weapons and missile systems, and no need for NATO. There's also no need to transact energy deals in U.S. dollars or stockpile U.S. treasuries to balance accounts. Transactions between business partners can be conducted in their own currencies, which is bound to precipitate a sharp decline in the value of the dollar and a dramatic shift in economic power. This is why the Biden administration opposes Nord Stream. It's not just a pipeline. It's a window into the future, a future in which Europe and Asia are drawn closer together in a massive free trade zone that increases their mutual power and prosperity while leaving the U.S. on the outside looking in. Warmer relations between Germany and Russia signal an end to the unipolar world order the U.S. has overseen for the last 75 years. A German-Russo alliance threatens to hasten the decline of the superpower that is presently inching closer to the abyss. This is why Washington is determined to do everything it can to sabotage Nord Stream and keep Germany within its orbit. It's a matter of survival. That's where Ukraine comes into the picture. Ukraine is Washington's weapon of choice for torpedoing Nord Stream and putting a wedge between Germany and Russia. The strategy is taken from page one of the U.S. Foreign Policy Handbook under the rubric Divide and Rule. Washington needs to create the perception that Russia poses a security threat to Europe. That's the goal. They need to show that Putin is a bloodthirsty aggressor with a hair-trigger temper who cannot be trusted. To that end, the media has been given the assignment of reiterating over and over again, Russia is planning to invade Ukraine. What's left unsaid is that Russia has not invaded any country since the dissolution of the Soviet Union, and that the U.S. has invaded or toppled regimes in more than 50 countries in the same period of time, and that the U.S. maintains over 800 military bases in countries around the world. None of this is reported by the media. Instead, the focus is on evil Putin, who has amassed an estimated 100,000 troops along the Ukrainian border, threatening to plunge all of Europe into another bloody war. All of the hysterical war propaganda is created with the intention of manufacturing a crisis that can be used to isolate, demonize, and ultimately splinter Russia into smaller units. The real target, however, is not Russia, but Germany. Check out this excerpt from an article by Michael Hudson at the UNS Review. The only way left for U.S. diplomats to block European purchases is to goad Russia into a military response and then claim that avenging this response outweighs any purely national economic interest. As hawkish Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland explained in a State Department press briefing on January 27th, if Russia invades Ukraine one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward. In the article, America's real adversaries are its European and other allies in UNS Review. There it is in black and white. The Biden team wants to goad Russia into a military response in order to sabotage Nord Stream. That implies there will be some kind of provocation designed to induce Putin to send his troops across the border to defend the ethnic Russians in the eastern part of the country. If Putin takes the bait, the response would be swift and harsh. The media will excoriate the action as a threat to all Europe, while leaders around the world will denounce Putin as the new Hitler. This is Washington's strategy in a nutshell, which we're watching play out as it happens before our very eyes, and the whole production is being orchestrated with one goal in mind, to make it politically impossible for the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz to wave Nord Stream through the final approval process. Given what we know about Washington's opposition to Nord Stream, readers may wonder why earlier in the year the Biden administration lobbied Congress not to impose more sanctions on the project. The answer to that question is simple: domestic politics. Germany is currently decommissioning its nuclear power plants and needs natural gas to make up for the energy shortfall. Also, the threat of economic sanctions is a turnoff for Germans, who see them as a sign of foreign meddling. Why is the United States interfering in our energy decision, asks the average German. Washington should mind its own business and stay out of ours. This is precisely the response one would expect from any reasonable person. Then there's this from Al Jazeera. Germans in the majority support the project. It's only parts of the elite and media who are against the pipeline. The more the U.S. talks about sanctioning or criticizing the project, the more it becomes popular in German society, said Stefan Meister, a Russia and East European expert at the German Council on Foreign Relations. Nord Stream 2, why Russia's pipeline to Europe divides the West, Al Jazeera. So public opinion is solidly behind Nord Stream, which helps explain why Washington settled on a new approach. Sanctions are not going to work, so Uncle Sam has flipped to Plan B. Create a big enough external threat that Germany will be forced to block the opening of the pipeline. Frankly, the strategy smacks of desperation, but you have to be impressed by Washington's perseverance. They might be down by 5 runs in the bottom of the 9th, but they haven't thrown in the towel just yet. They're going to give it one last shot and see if they can make some headway. On Monday, President Biden held his first joint press conference with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz at the White House. That would have been a week ago. The ballyhoo surrounding the event was simply unprecedented. Everything was orchestrated to manufacture a crisis atmosphere that Biden used to pressure the chancellor in the direction of U.S. policy. Earlier in the week, White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki repeatedly said that a Russian invasion was imminent. Her comments were followed by State Department flack Nick Price opining that the intel agencies had provided him with details of an alleged Russian-backed false flag operation they expected to take place in the near future in East Ukraine. Price's warning was followed on Sunday morning by National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, claiming that a Russian invasion could happen at any time, maybe even tomorrow. This was just days after Bloomberg News Agency had published its sensational and utterly false headline that Russia invades Ukraine, as though it had already taken place. Can you see the pattern here? Can you see how these baseless claims were all used to apply pressure to the unsuspecting German chancellor, who seemed oblivious to the campaign that was aimed at him? As one might expect, the final blow was delivered by the American president himself. During the press conference, Biden stated emphatically that if Russia invades, there will no longer be a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it. So now Washington sets policy for Germany? What insufferable arrogance. The German chancellor was taken aback by Biden's comments, which clearly were not part of the original script. Even so, Schultz never agreed to cancel Nord Stream and refused to even mention the pipeline by name. If Biden thought he could sandbag the leader of the world's third biggest economy by cornering him in a public forum, he guessed wrong. Germany remains committed to launching Nord Stream regardless of potential flare-ups in far-flung Ukraine. But that could change at any time. After all, who knows what incitements Washington might be planning in the near future? Who knows how many lives they are prepared to sacrifice in order to put a wedge between Germany and Russia? Who knows what risks Biden is willing to take to slow America's decline and prevent a new polycentric world order from emerging? Anything could happen in the weeks ahead. Anything. For now, Germany is in the catbird seat. It's up to Schultz to decide how the matter will be settled. Will he cave in to Biden's relentless arm twisting? Will he chart a new course that strengthens new alliances in the bustling Eurasian corridor? Or will he throw his support behind Washington's crazed geopolitical ambitions? Will he accept Germany's pivotal role in a new world order in which many emerging centers of power share equally in global governance and where the leadership remains unflinchingly committed to multilateralism, peaceful development, and security for all? Or will he try to prop up the tattered post-war system that has clearly outlived its shelf life? One thing is certain, whatever Germany decides is bound to affect us all. I think Mike Whitney has put it exactly right. And there's a whole lot of indirect evidence that substantiate what he has so discerningly outlined. This is the most perceptive piece yet I've encountered regarding what's going on here. The military-industrial complex can't allow the Nord Stream Germany pipeline to exist because it will weaken American power. NATO will no longer have a rationale for its existence. Expensive U.S. military equipment will no longer be in demand in Europe. And the United States will be relegated to the sidelines. So this is an act of desperation in geopolitics being played out by the Biden cabal as the instrument of the military-industrial complex. Here is another piece from the Daily Wrap-Up. You are being played with the Ukraine narrative. And this, in my opinion, may be the real reason why Putin has gone ahead to enter Ukraine. One day on reporting, after reporting on U.S. biolabs in Ukraine, the U.S. Embassy scrubs all Ukraine bioweapon lab docs from its website. This is fascinating. From Saturday. And we have a map of U.S. biolabs in Ukraine. They're all over the place. There are at least a dozen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 biolabs. Exclusive U.S. biolabs in Ukraine, and they are financed at the expense of the U.S. Department of Defense. Laboratories are located in Donetsk, Vinnytsia, Uzhgorod, Lviv 3, Kiev 3, Kherson, Ternopil, and near Crimea and Luhansk. Two other possible locations, Kharkiv and Mykolaiv. On Friday, I provided documentation of the fact that the U.S. does have biolabs in Ukraine, and it is possible that part of the intervention by Russia into Ukraine is because of it. I verified that the U.S. government did have documentation on those labs, but as of Saturday, that documentation has been scrubbed from their website. Here's a report and a condensed video, which you can find online. I verified U.S. Embassy in Ukraine, Biological Threat Reduction Program. The U.S. Department of Defense Biological Threat Reduction Program collaborates with partner countries to counter the outbreaks, deliberate, accidental, or natural, of the world's most dangerous infectious diseases. The program accomplishes its biothreat reduction mission through development of a biorisk management culture, international research partnerships, and partner capacity for enhanced biosecurity, biosafety, and biosurveillance measures. The biological threat reduction program priorities in Ukraine are to consolidate and secure pathogens and toxins of security concern, and to continue to ensure Ukraine can detect and report outbreaks caused by dangerous pathogens before they pose security or stability threats. Current executive agents of the Biological Threat Reduction Program in Ukraine are the Ministry of Health, the State Service of Ukraine for Food Safety and Consumer Protection, the National Academy of Agrarian Sciences, and the Ministry of Defense. This all, I believe, is very substantial confirmation of the report we have of these labs, and that there are many projects going on there. It includes research in the Sanitary Epidemiological Department of the Medical Command of the Ukrainian Defense of Ministry of Defense, which received 4 mobile laboratories from DTRA with a goal of reinforcing the system of epidemiological surveillance in the armed forces of Ukraine. On April 11, 2020, President Zelensky visited the SED, that's the Sanitary Epidemiological Department unit, in Pokrovsky City, Donetsk Oblast, and familiarized himself with the capabilities of the mobile laboratories to help military and civilians during the COVID-19 epidemic. BTRP has upgraded many laboratories for the Ministry of Health and the State Food. It seems to me taking these out would be a very appropriate measure. And other reports I have suggest Putin is also emancipating children that are held in sex slavery in Ukraine. And, of course, no doubt about it, Joe Biden's got to be upset that Russia has invaded the country that is laundering its money. So what responses is taking place? U.S., U.K., Europe, Canada to block Russian access to SWIFT. The United States, Britain, Europe, and Canada on Saturday moved to block Russia's access to the SWIFT international payment system as part of another round of sanctions against Moscow as it continues its assault against Ukraine. The measures, which will also include restriction on the Russian central bank's international reserves, will be implemented in the coming days, the nation said in a joint statement. Not only is that, in my opinion, an ill-advised move, but even worse, the following from antiwar.com. NATO activates response force to deploy thousands of troops near Ukraine. It marks the first time NATO's response force has been activated since it was formed in 2003. On Friday, NATO officials announced the alliance was activating parts of its response force and is sending thousands of troops to country near Ukraine amid Russia's assault on the country. Now, bear in mind, Putin has made it very clear he will not tolerate outside interference in this matter, and that the consequence, the effect of that happening will be severe. You can take his word for it. Putin is no one to push around. Unlike the United States, the words of the Russian leader actually mean something. The U.S. and NATO have reaffirmed they have no plan to send troops into Ukraine to fight Russia, but NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the alliance is prepared to defend every inch of NATO territory, which includes countries that border both Russia and Ukraine. The response force consists of 40,000 troops from NATO countries, but Stoltenberg said the alliance wouldn't be deploying the entire force and did not specify exactly how many troops will be sent to Eastern Europe. The response force was first created in 2003. This marks the first time it has been activated. On Thursday, Biden ordered 7,000 troops to be deployed to Germany. In recent weeks, the U.S. has bolstered its forces in the Baltics, Poland, and Romania, which means U.S. troops are not far from the fighting in Ukraine. Stoltenberg also added Friday that NATO countries announced the types of weapons they plan to give Ukraine as it fights Russia. The Pentagon said the U.S. will provide additional security assistance to Ukraine as well. On Thursday, Ukraine's defense minister pleaded with the U.S. to send Javelin anti-tank missiles and Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, which are indeed extremely effective anti-tank and anti-aircraft systems. Indeed, you may or may not recall, but Osama bin Laden was our man in Afghanistan. He was instrumental in getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen, which they used to shoot down Russian helicopters and planes to drive them out of that godforsaken country. We have a whole lot going on here, including that Putin has put Russian nuclear forces on the highest alert. Vladimir Putin put his country's nuclear deterrence force on high alert Sunday, that would be yesterday, announcing the move in a televised meeting with top ministers, coming as Russian troops and tanks continue to wage a conflict in Ukraine. Western countries are not only taking unfriendly actions against our country in the economic area, I'm speaking about the illegitimate sanctions everyone is aware of. However, the top officials of the leading NATO countries also make aggressive statements against our country as well, Putin said on Sunday. As a result, Putin has ordered the Minister of Defense and the Chief of the General Staff of the Russian Armed Forces to transfer the deterrence forces of the Russian Army to a special mode of combat duty. It is not immediately clear what that special mode of combat duty means. Previously, when Putin announced the Russian invasion earlier this week, he warned that if other countries get involved, they will face consequences they have never seen. Right back after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up. and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I think Mike Whitney just hit the ball right out of the park, and that we have a very significant increase in understanding exactly what's happened here. Putin putting his military on a high state of alert with regard to nuclear weapons is obviously a major development, and nothing should be taken for granted. Putin's order means Russia's nuclear weapons prepared for increased readiness to launch, raising the threat that tensions between Moscow and NATO could boil over into nuclear strikes. I think the American military-industrial complex would like nothing better, and that the Democrats would even favor it because they think it might lead to a rally-around-the-flag effect, which does not appear to be materializing. Indeed, on Sunday, I caught part of Meet the Press where Chuck Todd was talking about how in the following segment they were going to address whether or not there was a rally round the flag effect. And apparently the news was so damaging to the Democrats that they simply edited out the segment. Those shows, of course, are all recorded in advance, and the segment never played for reasons that will become obvious as we proceed. During a CBS News appearance, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, responded to Putin's statement from Sunday. "President Putin is continuing to escalate this war in a manner that is totally unacceptable," Thomas-Greenfield said Sunday morning. "We have to continue to condemn his actions in the most strongest possible way. Now there's a lot of talk against the banking sector. Gas, oil, SWIFT, it's worse than war. This is pushing Russia into a third world war," Lukashenko told local state media, referring to the sanctions. And he, of course, is a Russian spokesman, suggesting, of course, that this is a very bad idea. The alarming step came as street fighting broke out in Ukraine's second largest city, and Russian troops squeezed strategic ports in the country's south. Advances that appear to mark a new phase of the invasion, following a wave of attacks on airfields and fuel facilities elsewhere in the country, which all appear to have been taken out, including, by the way, the destruction of the world's largest aircraft used to haul cargo, of which there were, it appears, several on Ukrainian airfields that have been destroyed. The capital, Kyiv, meanwhile, was eerily quiet after huge explosions lit up the morning sky, and authorities reported blasts at one of the airports. Only an occasional car appeared on a deserted street, and a strict 39-hour curfew kept people off of them. Terrified residents hunkered down in homes, underground garages, and subway stations in anticipation of a full-scale Russian assault. The past night was tough. More shelling, more bombing of residential areas and civilian infrastructure, claimed Ukrainian President Zelensky. There's not a single facility in the country that occupiers wouldn't consider as admissible targets. Now that, let me say, I believe is complete propaganda. It's apparent in other sources suggest, contradicting the propaganda, that this is a kind of a soft invasion with a deliberate effort not to affect civilian targets. So I think what Zelensky is claiming here is simply blatantly false and consistent with all the propaganda coming from the West. Videos posted on Ukrainian media and social networks showed Russian vehicles moving across Kharkiv and Russian troops roaming the city in small groups. One showed Ukrainian troops firing at the Russians and damaged Russian light utility vehicles abandoned nearby. Meanwhile, here's an excellent tweet from one Gregory Hood, seeking to put things into perspective. "Russians aren't seizing your bank account, censoring the news, forcing you to take questionable vaccines, getting you fired, attacking you in the street, replacing you with foreigners and making you second-class citizens. The people who want war with Russia are doing all that." Excellent. 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 "Russians aren't seizing your bank account, censoring the news, forcing you to take questionable vaccines, getting you fired, attacking you in the street, replacing you with foreigners and making you second-class citizens. The people who want war with Russia..." And let me emphasize, the Biden administration in particular are doing all that with the support of the military-industrial complex at the bidding of George Soros and the Khazarian banking empire run by the Rothschild. We have to overcome letting ourselves be played by the mass of propaganda. Meanwhile, Trump spoke at CPAC. "The Ukraine invasion is an assault on humanity, and U.S. borders must be defended." I mean, notice the stunning contrast. The 45th president told the conference, "Under Bush, Russia invaded Georgia. Under Obama, Russia took Crimea. Under Biden, Russia invaded Ukraine. I stand as the only president of the 21st century on whose watch Russia did not invade another country." Trump said during his administration and leadership, "The world was a peaceful place because America was strong. I was proud to be the first president in decades who did not get our country into any wars. I got you out of wars." And about that, he's 100% correct. All the past presidents going back to Reagan have had 5 or 7 or 3 or 5 or more wars, all of them with the exception of Donald Trump. President Biden is perceived as weak, Trump said, asserting that Russian President Putin decided to attack Ukraine only after having witnessed the United States withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021. I have no doubt that President Putin made his decision to ruthlessly attack Ukraine only after watching the pathetic withdrawal from Afghanistan, where the military was taken out first and our soldiers were killed and American hostages plus $85 billion worth of the finest equipment anywhere in the world was left behind. Putin is playing Biden like a drum. Trump continued. The problem is not that Putin is smart, which, of course, he is smart. The real problem is that our leaders are dumb, so dumb. They so far allowed him to get away with his travesty and assault on humanity. NATO nations and the rest of the world are not so smart and are looking the opposite of smart, he commented. The further Putin escalates matters, the further death and destruction caused, the more money Putin makes, because oil prices keep climbing higher and higher and higher. Russia is the world's largest exporter of crude oil and largest natural gas exporter, accounting for 17% of the world's natural gas, 12% of its oil. The attack on Ukraine has heavily impacted oil prices, Trump said, noting that when he left office, oil was at $36 a barrel. But now the price has hit 100. And they're potentially going to hit 150. It's horrible because it's a disincentive for Putin to disengage, he said. He noted that under his administration, the cost of energy and gas was brought to record lows, and America became a net exporter of energy for the first time in 70 years. With Biden, you get a war in Europe and a war on American energy. With Republicans, you get energy independence and energy dominance. Separately, the former president said Democrats have been saying Ukraine's sovereignty must be defended at all costs, even while they're destroying our own borders and surrendering our own sovereignty. We have a border that's a catastrophe. In my opinion, Trump made many valid points. He made the nation energy independent for the very first time in, I don't know, 50 years. He created a strong economy where the lowest earning wage earners were seeing their wages rise at the highest rate, especially because he clamped down on the border. He called out the fake news. So while I hear a lot of complaints about Trump for his faults, and they are real, and I deplore them, including, of course, the attack on Soleimani, who is a great general and diplomat in the Middle East, and who was working for the benefit of the entire region, including Iran, that was an act of perfidy that, in my judgment, is unforgivable. But Trump did great good for America, and Biden's first actions in office were to scuttle, to sabotage all of that, just as he's now using provocations by Ukraine, fostered by the United States without any doubt, where many will remember that it was Victoria Nuland who in 2014 engineered a coup in Ukraine to take out the pro-Russian president and replace him with a Western stooge. In my opinion, this war should be properly labeled Victoria Nuland's war. That's what's taking place. The most important duty of every elected lawmaker is to protect and defend America, and that begins with protecting and defending America's borders. The Biden administration has spent months obsessing over how to stop an invasion of a foreign country thousands of miles away, Trump said. I believe Americans deserve a president who will stop the invasion of our country also. And we had it stopped 1 year ago. We had it. You can't defend Western civilization if you would not be able to defend your own. And that means we need borders that work. We must immediately stop the influx of illegal aliens. Our country is being poisoned from within. The Biden administration cares more about helping citizens of a distant foreign nation than it does about our own citizens. He said if Democrats truly want to fight for democracy abroad, they should start with Canada, where truckers and other Canadians have been protesting for basic rights against the country's COVID-19 restrictions and mandates. Trump called the situation a tyranny that should shock and dismay people all over the world. I could not agree more. Meanwhile, and this is a fascinating development, another speaker at CPAC was Tulsi Gabbard, who ripped into the power elite and the Biden, Clinton, neocon, neolib foreign policy. Fascinating. The former Hawaiian congresswoman also took a hit at Hillary for generating her fake narrative about Trump-Russia collusion. The Hawaiian U.S. Army Iraq War veteran who sought the Democrat presidential nomination in 2020 before endorsing Biden in March slammed what she dubbed the Biden, Clinton, neocon, neolib foreign policy, saying that in an ideal world, our leaders would haul James Clapper, former director of national intelligence under Barack Obama, before a judge to answer for his lies to Congress about how the government is collecting information. And they would support the Durham investigation and Hillary corruption in 2016. Special Counsel Durham has been investigating the legality of the FBI probe into the allegation of Trump's collusion with Russia, which turned out to be unsubstantiated. I would add, wholly fabricated. While Trump earlier denounced the FBI's Russiagate probe, officially known as Crossfire Hurricane, as a crime of the century, Moscow has repeatedly denied attempting to meddle in U.S. domestic affairs during the 2016 election. Gabbard, at this point in her speech on Friday, was referring to the discovery by Durham that Hillary paid cybersecurity experts to hack into Trump's election campaign, White House computer servers, to help establish a narrative to back her false claim that Republican ex-president colluded with Russia to defeat her in the 2016 election. The American politician, who is both of Samoan and European descent, ripped Democrats and Republicans in Congress for talking a good game about civil liberties but voting on the side of the power elite when it came to such things as scrapping secret foreign intelligence surveillance act courts, stopping three-letter agencies like the NSA, FBI, and CIA from illegally spying on Americans. The latest strategy and tactic they're using to try to undermine our free speech by taking it upon themselves to say they got the responsibility to protect us from so-called misinformation, she emphasized, also observing that rather than enter into a debate with those who criticize it, the current administration has opted to instigate a cancel culture for detractors. I'm sure you've all heard them before. I have, like today, Russian asset, white supremacist, bigot, racist, extremist, traitor, she continued, pointing to the wording of a Department of Homeland Security government bulletin issued earlier in February entitled Summary of Terrorism Threat to the U.S. Homeland. According to her, one is thrown into the crosshairs as an enemy of the state if one even questions the president, his administration, or his policies. Tulsi had previously tweeted, great, thank you, Hillary Clinton, the queen of warmongers, embodiment of corruption and personification of the rot that has sickened the Democratic Party for so long, have finally come out from behind the curtain from the day I announced my candidacy. Tulsi also attacked what she slammed as tribalism in the country, warning it's dangerous and emblematic of an erosion of a spiritual foundation in this country. She concluded on an upbeat note, saying the future path will be lit by the fire of freedom that burns brightly in the hearts of Americans in every community. Now, this, in my opinion, is a completely fascinating development. And in my opinion, what's taking place with Tulsi is a transition from the Democrat Party, where she has chosen not to run again, to make a transition to a neutral observer and now speaking at CPAC. Frankly, although Tulsi has shown a lack of enthusiasm for the Second Amendment, in my opinion, she would make a terrific running mate for Donald Trump. Trump and Tulsi, Tulsi and Trump. It's got a great ring to it. She's a very substantial person. If you want if you would like to see a woman who's a political figure of intelligence and competence and experience and even, I dare say, wisdom, Tulsi Gabbard is my choice. No doubt this will come as rather a startling suggestion, but give it some thought. We have a ways to go. But in my opinion, there's no way Tulsi Gabbard would have been allowed to speak at CPAC had it not been with the approval of Donald Trump. Think about it. Meanwhile, new poll. Significant majority says Putin wouldn't have invaded Ukraine if Trump were president. A new poll shows that a significant majority of American voters say that Russian President Vladimir Putin would not have invaded Ukraine if former President Donald Trump still occupied the White House. The poll was a Harvard Center for American Political Studies Harris Poll survey, according to The Hill. Here's Clay Travis tweeting, Harvard Harris Poll. 62% of Americans don't believe Putin would have invaded Ukraine if Trump was still president. 59% of Americans believe Putin invaded Ukraine because he believes Joe Biden is weak. I agree with both majorities here. Meanwhile, there's another poll. Americans overwhelmingly do not want Biden forcing U.S. into major role in Russia-Ukraine conflict. The Hill reported the survey found that 62% of those polled believe Putin would not be moving against Ukraine if Trump had been president. When looking strictly at the answers of Democrats and Republicans, 85% of Republicans, but also 38% of Democrats answered this way. A majority also said they believe Putin viewed Biden as weak, making his invasion of Ukraine more likely. The Hill reported, a majority of Americans polled, 59%, also said they believed the Russian president moved on Ukraine because Putin saw weakness in President Biden, while 41% said it was not a factor in Putin's decision to invade. Here's David Atherton tweeting, Putin would not have invaded Ukraine if Donald Trump had been in power, say a majority of Americans. This is the opinion of 62% of Americans found in a Harvard Center for American Political Studies Harris poll. The new poll is only the latest in a string of surveys showing low approval ratings for Biden. Trump himself has made the same argument. Last week, the former president said during an interview, this would never have happened if we were there, but he did. Chuck Todd asked that question. How come there was none of this happening during the Trump administration? I knew Putin very well. I got along with him great. He liked me. I liked him. I mean, you know, he's a tough cookie. Got a lot of the great charm and a lot of pride. But the way he loves his country, you know, he loves his country. He's acting a little differently, I think, now. This new survey comes in the wake of numerous polls showing low approval ratings for the Biden administration on every issue imaginable. COVID-19 pandemic, a botched Afghanistan withdrawal, Democrat infighting, now the invasion of Ukraine, not to mention the stunning rising price of gasoline, which is only going to be made much, much worse by what's going on and efforts to punish Russia for the invasion that are going to cut off access to gas to Germany if they have their way. I agree 100% that the Nord Stream pipeline is what this is all about. What it is all about. Listen to this now. This is a commentator. Actually, Mike Harris, who's excellent. He was a guest on my last show last week. Scott, excellent interview, but with one minor but significant correction. The troublemakers and murderers in Ukraine who are killing the Russian people of eastern Ukraine have been branded as Nazis, but the entire inspiration and implementation of the U.S.-led coup in Ukraine was Bolshevik Zionist Jews. Newland is a Zionist Jew, and all of the post-coup government of Ukraine was Zionist Jew. Poroshenko, the chocolate king, is a Zionist Jew. Poroshenko was the first post-coup president of Ukraine. And that, of course, is the coup engineered by Victoria Nuland. For the last 70-plus years, the Hollywood Zionist Jews have created a Nazi narrative that all the evil is caused by Nazis, when it is Zionist Jews who, never forget the Armenian genocide was created by Jews and blamed on the Turks, are the instigators and implementers of these crimes against humanity. This may seem like a minor issue, but control of the language is critical for our success as a free people. The use of the word Nazi allows the Zionist Jews to avoid culpability for their crimes because they still use the so-called Nazi Holocaust as a shield of victimhood to deflect any blame from themselves for their multitude of crimes. A Nazi flag and a swastika does not make a Zionist into a Nazi. It is only camouflage to disguise a Zionist Jew from being identified as the real criminals and culprits of these crimes against humanity. This is similar when an Antifa member wears a Trump MAGA hat to a rally and starts trouble to make the media and people who watch the media believe it was Trump supporters who called the problems. All this has a foundation in deception. Do not be duped by their camouflage. See through it and act accordingly. Control the language and we will win this war. As a former PSYOPs officer, you already know this. In solidarity, Mike Harris, writing to Scott Bennett, with whom I do many shows and is a dedicated colleague, a former Army intel and PSYOPs officer, will be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Having spent 35 years in higher education, offering courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning to generations of students, I've been completely appalled by the action of one of the most despicable members of Congress, possibly in the history of the nation, Eric Swalwell, who's calling for Russian students to be kicked out of American universities. On Thursday, Congressman Swalwell, Democrat of California, of course, suggests that the United States deport Russian college students and shutter the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. in response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. While on CNN Newsroom, Representative Swalwell said, frankly, I think closing their embassy in the United States, kicking every Russian student out of the United States, those should be on the table. He continued, Vladimir Putin needs to know every day that he is in the Ukraine, that there are more severe options that could come. This is the largest invasion in Europe since World War II, and these are the harshest sanctions that any country has experienced since World War II. There will be more to come. Let me add, this is a guy who had an affair with a Chinese communist spy named Fang Fang. So while Eric Swalwell was playing bang bang with Fang Fang, he was on the Intelligence Committee of the House of Representatives, where Nancy Pelosi has left him to this day. If you want to have another reason to be in disgust with the Democrat Party today, Eric Swalwell is a perfect example. On Saturday, Western allies agreed to ramp up the sanctions placed on Russia by blocking Russian banks from accessing the SWIFT network, which, of course, will mean Russia will become even more independent. Its alliance with China and undoubtedly with Iran, is going to grow stronger and stronger. And taking Russia out of SWIFT is actually going to have the consequence of weakening the dollar. In a joint statement, leadership from the European Commission, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, the UK, and the US committed to amplifying financial sanctions by prohibiting Russian banks from using the telecommunication network to conduct international and domestic transactions. By preventing Russia from using SWIFT, Western leaders will effectively isolate them and make it incredibly difficult for the Russian economy to make either short or long-term gains. These sanctions notably interfere with Russia's ability to export natural gas and oil, where fuel exports comprise more than half of Russia's GDP. Let me say, I'm seeing, you know, parallels here to what happened to precipitate the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. If you look at the book Day of Deceit by John Stennett, for example, he explains how the United States restricted access to Japan to oil in the South Pacific. We deliberately contrived and provoked Japan, just as the United States is now deliberately provoking the bear. I believe Russia is an overwhelmingly greater threat to the United States than Japan ever represented, though at the time, of course, it was a ferocious enemy. Bear in mind, Representative Swalwell currently serves on the House Intelligence Committee at the behest of Nancy Pelosi, who condones all of his shenanigans with a Chinese communist spy. Who knows how much information she was able to extract from him. Previously, per federal investigation, Swalwell had a close personal relationship with a woman named Christine Fang. As it turned out, Ms. Fang was a spy for the Chinese government. Representative Swalwell and Ms. Fang were involved while Swalwell served on the House Intelligence Committee, as he continues to do today. Upon learning of Ms. Fang and Swalwell's relationship, high members of the House Republican Caucus called for his removal from the House Intelligence Committee, which, however, has not happened. Think about it. Think about it. Think about it. What are these people like Pelosi and Biden doing for the national security of the United States? Completely open borders, floods of millions of illegals into the United States, allowing a guy who's having an affair with a Chinese spy to remain on the House Intelligence Committee. I mean, these are blatant acts that leave no doubt about it. In mid-January, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, a Republican from California, said if the GOP wins a majority in the House after the 2022 midterm, Representative Swalwell will be stripped of his role on the House Intelligence Committee. Well, that's the obvious and right thing to do. The question becomes, why hasn't that already happened? Why haven't the Democrats strip Swalwell of his position on the House Intelligence Committee? I ask you, what could be more blatant? What could be more disqualifying? Meanwhile, the Israeli data that nukes the Pfizer vaccine, what did Pfizer know and when did they know it? From station gossip. Last year, Philip Dormitzer, the chief scientific officer at Pfizer, described Israel as a sort of laboratory to see the effect of their vax. Last year, Philip Dormitzer, chief scientific officer at Pfizer, described Israel as sort of a laboratory to see the effect of his company's vaccine. Well, it took over a year into the vaccine drive that injected most Israelis with three shots, some with four, to finally publish information on adverse effects. But Israel published earlier this month, based on a health ministry survey of 2,049 who got booster shots, is not only damning, but unmistakably revealing since there is no way Pfizer did not see these adverse effects during the clinical trials in 2020. What did they know, and when did they know it? On February 10th, the Israeli Health Ministry published, English version here, the results of a survey of adverse events among roughly 2,000 random Israelis who received booster shots. It's shocking it took this long for them to conduct such a survey and didn't do this a year ago, but it's better late than never. Just the top line numbers from the survey should alarm us all. A total of 75% of the women, 58% of the men, reported experiencing at least one side effect within the 21 to 30-day follow-up period of the interview. Obviously, the majority were minor, but 51% of the women and 35% of the men who experienced a side effect reported that as a result, they had difficulty performing daily activities. In other words, they were serious enough that they inhibited from living their life in a normal fashion. Full stop right there. Even before we get into more serious problems, just the fact that the shock knocked out such a massive percentage of people clearly violates the informed consent through which the shots were marketed and most certainly makes any mandate immoral. Right off the bat, it's clear this is not like taking a vitamin D pill. Moreover, the fact that we have zero long-term studies, but such a massive percentage get at least sick feeling from it in the short run should concern everyone. Again, why wasn't such a survey conducted in January 2021 after the first dose? Just take a look at the massive percentage of reports, especially for females, experiencing weakness, muscle ache, shaking, high temperature, dizziness, vomiting, and of course, I add, the percentage of miscarriages is staggering. The very idea that they allowed pregnant women to be subjected to the test is off an offense and a crime against humanity. This is a massive percentage for a product ubiquitously marketed, endorsed, distributed, and then mandated by global governments as the safest and most effective vaccine of all time. And for a virus that, with most young people, would cause roughly the same symptoms anyway, even after being vaccinated. In fact, among the young, we have a 99.9% survival rate absent the vaccines. When you introduce the vaccine, however, the damage becomes massive. Yet, some people might have willingly taken a shot if they thought they'd get some flu-like symptoms, but even that confidence that the flu-like symptoms don't portend more severe long-term damage can only work for an established vaccine that already has long-term safety data. Now let's do some more, let's get to some of the more serious or potentially serious issues. The same table shows 5.5% reported experiencing chest pain. We already know there are major safety concerns for cardiovascular issues, and that the spike protein is very pro-inflammatory and potentially thrombotic. And remember, this is 5.5% of just one dose. If you extrapolate that to America, where 551 million doses have been administered, that would be approximately 30 million cases of chest pain. It doesn't necessarily mean it causes short-term or long-term damage, but again, with a new vaccine with a novel and dangerous mechanism of action and no long-term safety studies, how can this be allowed to continue without further study? A total of 4.5% of those who received the booster shots reported neurological side effects. Assuming the doses are all relatively the same, that would extrapolate to roughly 55 million cases of neurological side effects in the United States. It would lend a lot of credence to the military whistleblowers who report seeing more than a tenfold increase in nervous system diagnoses in 2021, and leaves no doubt that the DOD was bluffing when it responded with revised data showing not even a modest increase. In other words, even the military is lying to us. There's no doubt that the spike protein of the pathogen causes nervous system disorders in some people, just like it causes cardiovascular disorders. But clearly the shots do so as well. And remember, they don't prevent you from getting the pathogen. They don't prevent you from getting the vax. They don't prevent you from transmitting the vax, the virus. You're still contagious or can spread the virus whether you've been vaccinated or not. You can still get it again. You're not safe in any case. So what the hell is the point? We have been played. Oh, roughly 10% of women under 54 experienced menstrual irregularities, for which 31% sought medical attention. Delayed menstruation was the most common side effect. While we can't say definitively this will cause reproductive issues, such a safety signal is not normal. And in conjunction with a Japanese biodistribution document from Pfizer's animal study showing lipid nanoparticles, which are pro-inflammatory, depositing in the ovaries, it's a job of the government to prove conclusively this is not a problem, not the other way around. Think about it. These agencies like the FDA and the CDC and the NIH are supposed to be protecting the American people from harms that are caused by medical procedures, but they're not doing that. Remember, this is just a survey of the first month following the shot. There's no study of the long-term effects of microclotting, heart inflammation, neurological inflammation, immune suppression, antibody-dependent disease enhancement, or autoimmune disorders. We already know the spike protein circulates potentially for months in some people. More. Pfizer steps up advertising for its blockbuster drug to treat heart conditions, including those caused by its own vaccine. Get this. How they produce a harmful vaccine and then market a product to deal with the effects brought about by their own vaccine. How disgusting is this? The profit margin is a bottom line. They could care less about your or my or Americans or any other human being's safety and security. All they care about is marketing the vax. Pfizer and Bristol-Myers Squibb this month revived the No Time to Wait ad campaign, urging people experiencing heart issues to visit their doctors. The two drug makers developed and market Eliquis, the top-selling drug for the very heart conditions associated with people who receive Pfizer's COVID vaccine. You see how it works. The two major pharmaceutical companies chose February, the month of love or of hearts, to launch an advertising campaign urging people experiencing heart issues for the first time to visit their doctors. Pfizer and Bristol-Myers Squibb, BMS, this month revived the No Time to Wait ad campaign, spending $1.28 million on TV ads alone. The campaign warns everyone experiencing palpitations and shortness of breath that they may be at increased risk of developing atrial fibrillation, deep vein thrombosis, and other types of blood clots and strokes, the same type of cardiovascular ailments found among people who have received the COVID vaccines. They know they're likely to have them because they know those are effects of their own vaccines. This is obscene beyond words. The campaign urges viewers to seek early medical attention to reduce the risk of these serious complications. Early medical attention could include prescriptions, gloves, drugs, including Eliquis, developed and marketed by none other than Pfizer and BMS. Is Pfizer benefiting from vaccine-induced ailments? Does a bear shit in the woods? Could the relaunching of the No Time to Wait campaign represent an effort by Pfizer to engage in damage control from the increase in vaccine-induced heart conditions while benefiting from the sale of a drug used to address those same ailments? There are several objectives Pfizer and BMS could accomplish with this campaign. First, by launching an advertising campaign warning people they may be at risk of certain heart conditions. Pfizer and BMS are, in a sense, naturalizing heart ailments in young and or healthy individuals. Second, by naturalizing the prevalence and likelihood of such heart conditions, these companies may deflect blame for these conditions from COVID vaccines, including Pfizer BioNTech. Third, by referring patients to their doctors, the Fire BMS Alliance may directly benefit financially from the increased prevalence of heart ailments and conditions in the vaccinated public as doctors prescribe more Eliquis, the top-selling blood thinner and AF drug, to treat their symptoms. According to Pfizer and the Center for Disease Control, even the healthiest athletes are now at risk for blood clots, as stated in an urgent warning issued this month. But of course, they weren't at risk for blood clots in the past, not in the whole history of organized athletics up until now. Only after the vax has been introduced is this the case. Well, we have world-class athletes who are dropping dead on the field. It's not being reported, covered much here in the USA, but in Europe, it's making the news regularly. The media and health authorities in recent months have offered multiple explanations for why healthy people are developing blood clotting and heart conditions, blaming everything from weather and energy bills to cannabis, but not the COVID vaccines. Here are some examples. September 2021. The Times of India ran a story on a doctor's reminder that nobody is too young for a heart attack. Same month. A study indicated that cannabis use doubled the risk of heart attacks in young adults. That sounds ridiculous to me. If anything, cannabis gives you a more mellow attitude toward life, less stress, more relaxed, lower blood pressure. That's just absurd. October 2021, the New York Post reported on the little-known heart attack that's striking fit and healthy women as young as 22. Yeah, little known, but it's all a consequence, an obvious consequence of the vax. November, British tabloid The Sun reported the way cold weather can affect your body, from winter vagina to blood clots. Give me a break. Same month, a Times of India report asks why heart attacks are becoming common in seemingly fit people. Well, look at the data. Find out how many of those who are having these bizarre effects have taken the vax. You're going to find it's 100%. Same month, Healthline reported e-cigarettes can raise the risk of a heart disease and stroke. Well, any cigarettes can. That's not new. But they're throwing it in to camouflage the effects of the vax. December, another British tabloid, Express, warned about the healthy diet that may increase your risk for having a heart attack. A healthy diet increases your risk for a heart attack? Give me a break. January of 2022, Norton Health informed us preventing heart disease in children is becoming more urgent as more kids develop heart disease. But they're not asking why. The more you jab the kids, the more it occurs. This is parallel to the occurrence of autism. The more the kids get vaccinated, the greater the rate of autism. The less they're vaccinated, the less the rate of autism. That's what's going on here. This is plain as could be, right before our very eyes. A report is published again the same month. Sports can break your heart in more ways than one. Right. Jesus, I thought we were always told athletics are good to develop our bodies physically and protect our health to maintain it. Now they're telling us, no, it can cause heart attacks. Give me a break. Same month, the Daily Mail warned risk of heart problems could be increased even if you drink less than the National Health Service weekly units referring to recommendations of alcoholic consumption. Same month, Sun ran a report claiming weather can harm one's health, leading to heart attack, stroke, or gout. The weather. Same month. Another report by The Sun warned 300,000 Brits were living with a stealth disease that could kill within 5 years. The stealth disease in question aortic valve stenosis, a condition where the heart's aortic valve narrows, which I have no doubt is another consequence of the vax. February, Nature magazine reported the risk of heart disease soars after COVID, even with a mild case, neglecting to add, if you've taken the vax. I guarantee you it doesn't soar, even with a mild case, if you have not taken the vax. Same month, a doctor interviewed on the UK's ITV warned an increase in energy bills may cause heart attacks and strokes. How does that happen? You're being charged more for your gas and energy, and that is going to increase your liability to heart attacks? Mark Crispin Miller, professor of media, culture, and communication at New York University and founder of News from the Underground, compiled a list of reports like those listed here. In looking at incidents and reports during the week of February 8 through 14 alone, Crispin told readers, before we note all those whose sudden deaths made news just this past week, unexpected deaths with no reported cause or due to heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, cardiac arrest, or swift aggressive cancers, all known to be adverse effects post-vaccination. Let's review how this unprecedented global spike in sudden death has been deliberately obscured by our free press. Miller highlighted an ABC News report, broken heart cases surged during COVID, especially among women. In another example, Science magazine reported geneticists found the answer to sudden unexplained child deaths, downplaying the connection between the COVID vaccines and serious heart conditions often has involved high-profile athletes. For example, 33-year-old soccer star Sergio Aguero of FC Barcelona, world-famous soccer team, forced to announce his retirement in December after suffering chest pains and dizziness during a match in October. He never played again. According to Aguero's cardiologist, the vaccine was not the reason for his ailment and retirement. However, Aguero himself, in a Twitter question-and-answer session, did not reject the possibility, stating, I don't know if COVID or the vax caused my retirement, admitting he had received the vaccine. Media, however, continue to promote the narrative that vaccines have nothing to do with a surge in sudden illness or death among athletes. For example, Miller cited a February 1st Washington Post article describing stories of athletes dying to COVID vax as a falsehood. We'll be right back.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Yeah.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. Mitchell had a conflict today, and alas, I'm unable to take your calls. If you wanted to send a question by email, I will check and see if I can field it. Probably the simplest address to use is jim@moonrockbooks.com. jim@moonrockbooks.com. Meanwhile, Mark Crispin Miller, who is a good guy, compared what he described as a disgraceful Washington Post report with a documented timeline of athletes who suffered from heart failure between March of 2021 and January of 2022. The string of incidents is further illustrated and detailed by the Real Science blog, which found 707 such incidents as of this writing and demonstrated in graphical form the sharp increase in heart failure incidents involving athletes over the course of 2021 and into 2022 as COVID vaccination uptake increased. Now, there's a fellow named Mike King who runs the anti-New York Times website. He's actually published a lot of fascinating stuff. I don't always agree, but he's a very smart guy. Now he's published a piece on a lesson from history on February 25th, just a couple of days ago. European Renaissance. Be a part of the solution by helping us to inform and inspire others. For in the 1930s, Britain urged Poland, today Ukraine, to constantly provoke her German neighbors, today Russia. Promises were made to the Polish government, Ukraine, that in the event of a German military response, or Russian, Britain and her empire would ally itself to Poland to resist the German armed forces. In other words, there's a parallel here. Assured and encouraged, some would say goaded, the Polish armed forces, using militias, constantly carried out cross-border raids. On September 1st, 1939, the Polish attack, like the Ukrainian attack on Donbass, on the German border town of Gluckwitz, resulted in Hitler's Germany, or today Russia, responded by overrunning only that territory occupied illegally by Poland, contrary to the terms of the Versailles Treaty. Assistance by Britain and France was not forthcoming and would never materialize. However, Britain now had an excuse for war that the Westminster War Party desired. This was a war not to defend Poland, but a necessary excuse to declare war on Britain's main trade rival, Germany. February 1st, 1945, Poland's General Anders reproached Winston Churchill for not adhering to the English guarantees to defend Poland. He asked the unelected war premier, "What shall we say to our soldiers? Soviet Russia is now confiscating half our territory and wants a remaining part of Poland to be managed according to its own fashion. We know from experience where that leads." The guileful and duplicitous Churchill smiled. "You yourself are to blame for that. We did not guarantee your eastern frontier. Today we have enough soldiers and do not need your aid. You can remove your divisions. We are not using them anymore." Winston Churchill. "You did not say that during the last few years," replied the Polish General Anders. Churchill conceded that Poland was cynically used to provide Britain with a justification for declaring war on Germany. History certainly does repeat itself. There are other aspects here where he's showing, you know, incidents more recent. This is about defending Russia from those who hold Ukraine hostage and use it against our country and its people. Moscow says it has no plans to occupy Ukraine, President Putin. Promises broken, abandoned by the West provocateurs. Zelensky is ready to talk peace and neutrality with guarantees. Winston lied, Britons died. We were used by corrupt elites, brother against brother. Take Britain back. Gave Europe to Soviet Union and empire to Wall Street. Transferred Britain's colonies to Wall Street. Invited millions of migrants to the UK. Winston Churchill, Harold Macmillan, and Boris Johnson are passport-holding U.S. citizens. Very, very troubling. Very, very troubling. And I do know there are those who claim that the provocation, the so-called Polish attack, was actually prisoners of war dressed in Polish uniforms to justify a German response. So that comes as no surprise if one were to accent that thought. Meanwhile, on my blog, there have been a number of very thoughtful comments to what I reported here from Mike Whitney about the real reason for wanting to provoke a war in with Russia using Ukraine as the instrument, to wit, because they're going after Nord Stream in order to preserve European dependence upon America to keep a rationale for the existence of NATO. It's very, very serious. But there's a rather thoughtful response here from multiple of the commentators. Will too, for example, writes, "Now that makes more sense than anything I have read to date. I dare to say that if Trump were here, negotiation would be primary and war off the table. But with Brandon there, war is on the table, and since the man has no verbal skills and could not navigate his way out of a bathroom stall, this is not to say that I believe we should have any say in the matter, but geopolitics rule, and nation states only exist as a distant memory. What a time to have a virtual imbecile at the helm. Russia bad, Ukraine good, Germany the pawn. The puppet show continues. The corporatocracy pulls the strings." Will, too, makes quite a few very perceptive observations. Meanwhile, there's a comment by Preston. There's an article by Preston James and Mike Harris, The Hidden History of the Incredibly Evil Khazarian Mafia. And this is simply a note about it, since it's related to what's going on here. Editor's note, although originally published on 11 March 2015, the Rothschild attempt to seize control of the world gives it current relevance, as indeed it has for world history since the creation of Israel in 1948. The curtain is now being pulled back to fully expose the Khazarian Mafia and its evil plan to infiltrate and tyrannize the whole world and eradicate all Abrahamic religions And now only their Babylonian Talmudism, also known as Luciferianism, Satanism, or ancient Baal worship, Israeli bombing of the Gaza Strip included. That's a really wonderful article you can find on my blog. Preston James and Mike Harris, Hidden History of the Incredibly Evil Khazarian Mafia. Here's another from David Kraft. That's some intriguing insight. Again, talking about Mike Whitney, the crisis in Ukraine is not about Ukraine, it's about Germany. The confusion grows by the day on what's actually happening. Separating the wheat from the chaff in the alternative media is a full-time job. No wonder so many people have permanently turned out. Perhaps they are better off than mainstream news consumers who think they know what's going on but actually have no clue. I heard someone spouting off on the Lyft line the other day what NATO needs to do about Ukraine, and it was boilerplate news ministry speak. Biden's guys get more slit, like every time I see him appear. Eventually, there will just be two little horizontal lines. Is there anything behind those eyes? Maybe he's been replaced with a Westworld lifelike robot. And by the way, I've noticed the same, that Biden's eyes have just become increasingly narrow slits. Here's another comment from the same author, David Kraft. Here's another viewpoint about Russia's soft invasion of Ukraine from an American in Kiev. I think it's making a boatload of sense. His take is Russia wants to capture Ukraine intact along with its military, so they own the sky and are careful not to destroy civilian infrastructure like water, power, and communication utilities. The Russians are also being careful not to harm any civilians, and that Russia could have annihilated the Ukrainian military already and have not. Check him out. Very good. I think that's exactly right. I think that Mike Whitney has given us an explanation for what's going on. There still remains a load of propaganda out there about the Russian invasion, that Putin has put a hit squad out to target Zelensky, which I do not believe, that Ukraine is requesting immediate access to the European Union. Ukraine president signs request for immediate membership in the European Union. This is worth noting. An embattled Ukraine moved to solidify its bond with the West Monday by signing an application to join the European Union. While the first round of Ukraine-Russia talks aimed at ending the fighting concluded with no immediate agreements, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky posted photos of himself signing the EU application, a largely symbolic move that could take years to become reality and is unlikely to sit well with Russian President Putin, who has long accused the West of trying to pull Ukraine into its orbit. Russia and Ukraine officials held their meeting on day five of the war under the shadow of Putin's nuclear threats, and with Moscow's invasion of Ukraine running into unexpectedly fierce resistance, or so we are told. Early Monday night, a top advisor to Ukraine's president said the first round of talks had ended and that both delegations had returned home for consultation in their capitals. Mikhailo Podolyak gave few details except to say the talks held near the Ukraine-Belarus border were focused on a possible ceasefire and that a second round could take place in the near future. At this stage, Ukraine is many years away from reaching the standards for achieving EU membership, and the 27-nation bloc is expansion-wary and unlikely to take on new members anytime soon. In addition, any additional member of the EU must be approved unanimously, and some member states have complicated approval procedures. Overall, the consensus has been that Ukraine's deep-seated corruption would make it hard for the country to win EU acceptance. Still, in an interview with Euronews on Sunday, EU Commissioner-Chief Ursula von der Leyen said, "We want them in the European Union." Meanwhile, outgunned Ukrainian forces, managed to slow the Russian advance, and Western sanctions began to squeeze the Russian economy. But the Kremlin again raised the specter of nuclear war, reporting that its land, sea, and air nuclear forces were on high alert. Stepping up his rhetoric, Putin denounced the U.S. and its allies as an empire of lies, about which he is unquestionably correct. I have a call here from Brew. Brew, did you, can we connect here? Try that again. Try that again, Brew. Let me see if I can bring you in. A tense calm remained in Kiev, where people lined up to buy food, water, and pet food after two nights trapped inside by a strict curfew. But social media video from Ukraine's second largest city, Kharkiv, showed residential areas being shelled with apartment buildings shaken by repeated. Let me see. I got to do this. I can merge the call if I can get him. Who are you there? Can you hear me? Brew.
Yeah.
Go for it. Glad to have you calling. Go ahead.
Want to make sure we didn't knock ourselves off the air, that's all.
Right, right, right. Me too. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, you know, I was listening to Russell Bentley. Have you heard of Russell Bentley? Who a friend of show to Jeff Rentz?
Fill me in. Tell me more.
Okay, well, Russell Bentley is a heritage Texan, and he actually moved to Ukraine, and he actually, I don't know the whole background of it, but has been supporting the people that are liberating and fighting what he's calling the Nazis and the people that have, you know, the criminal syndicate and so on and so forth that's been in there in Ukraine. And he's been living there for quite some time and, you know, has a wife there and whatever. And he's been giving us live reports from Ukraine. He's in his 60s now, so he can't technically be a fighter. But he is reporting and organizing and doing coverage over there. Well, in any case, yesterday at band.video, the InfoWars Network site, they posted from the Flyover Network. They're another like little independent news source. They do conversations and whatnot. Anyway, Russell Bentley went on there and said that Zelensky had already fled the Ukraine and went to Turkey under Erdogan.
You know, I've heard such a report before, Brew, but I'm very glad you bring it up. This is good. Tell us more.
Well, that, you know, I mean, the whole thing, we all know Victoria Nuland, and, you know, they're in there between the Bidens, Mitt Romney, all of them. You just name a name, and you're probably not wrong. Some of these criminal syndicates, these oligarchs, they call the Russian oligarchs. They keep saying the Russian oligarchs, we're going to put a stimple on the Russian oligarchs, but we have our criminal cartel, which are oligarchs themselves, you know, the Bidens, the Clintons, and so forth. Some have more money than others, but nonetheless, with all the money laundering and that they're using U.S. tax dollars or U.S. money, rather, to flood through these countries and all the criminal activity they're doing from, you know, natural resources to human trafficking and any number of things. I mean, it's just a playground for these people. While Zelensky himself in the past 4 years, according to Russell Bentley, has stolen $1 billion out of the Ukrainian economy, out of the Ukrainian coffers, $1 billion for himself.
Yes, 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 yes. Yes. Give us more.
In any case, you know, as Bentley puts it, you know, Erdogan is a two-faced snake, and if Zelensky thinks he's safe over there with Erdogan, he can forget about it. He'll probably put Zelensky up for sale to the highest bidder.
Yeah.
So,
very good.
What's your take on the whole? See, Russell Bentley's really hardcore, and some other people are really hardcore by calling it. Even Vladimir Putin says, we're going to denazify, you know, Ukraine and so on. And then, of course, whatever. So what's your take on who they're calling Nazis? What this is really confusing anymore, because we've been learning real history throughout time, and to learn that the Germans, World War II Germany, and their troops and so forth weren't necessarily at the evil progenitors as, you know, the revisionist history, the victors that write the history books want to tell us, you know, about, you know, Holocaust and, you know, murder and mayhem, whatever. It was quite the opposite. They were fighting against those people, the Bolsheviks, who were actually the ones that were, you know, trying to spread communism and evil throughout Europe. And even after the war, had killed millions of Germans along with the help of the United States. So what's your take on this whole Nazi thing? What are we actually looking at? Where do these people come from? Are they just like Antifa pretending to be Nazis? Are they Bolsheviks wearing Nazis that can carry on the, you know, the hysteria about Germany in World War II? What's your take?
Well, of course, it's being used as a form of political rhetoric to demonize the regime in the Ukraine. But the indispensable element here is that in 2014, Victoria Nuland executed this coup in Ukraine to take out the pro-Russian president and install a Western puppet. And things have gone downhill ever since. And now I think that Mike Whitney has it exactly right, that the U.S. and the military-industrial complex have been using Ukraine to provoke Russia into taking an action by undertaking shelling of the Russian-speaking regions in the east in particular, so that Russia would feel an obligation to come to their defense after having declared them to be independent republics, and that they're doing so in a soft invasion to preserve as much of the infrastructure and as much damage to civilians as is possible. But remember, Brute, Ukraine for hundreds of years has been part of Russia. It's been indispensable. One author said it was like suggesting Russia was invading Ukraine is like suggesting the United States is invading California. I believe an additional motive, by the way, is the fact that Ukraine is very much the breadbasket of Russia. It's a primary source of food. Zbigniew Brzezinski, in his book, The Grand Chessboard, made the point that if you could pry Ukraine away from Russia, that it would greatly weaken the bear. I believe that is the very neocon, neoliberal foreign policy Tulsi Gabbard was deploring, and that she's got it exactly right. I also do believe, if Trump were still president, as he ought to have been, that there would be no invasion taking place. I think those are a couple of key elements of the political theater. There is going to be no rally round the flag effect. As I observed, even though Chuck Todd introduced it as a forthcoming subject they were about to discuss, they obviously edited out the segment because it was so unflattering to Biden and gave the Democrats no hope that the country is going to rally to the support of a president because of a war, which most believe came about because of his own incompetence. And, of course, we have the poll, which I referred to, already confirming that's exactly the case. So the interesting question, Brew, becomes what's going to happen tomorrow? We have the State of the Union coming from this feeble, incompetent president of the United States who's nothing but a tool of powers behind the scene, including George Soros. Remember, it was his son who selected Kamala Harris as mediocre a vice president as we've ever had, and that's quite a distinction since the history of the United States is littered with mediocrities in the office of vice president. What is Biden going to do? Is he going to try to double down on COVID? He's extended the emergency. He's going to continue to demonize Russia. He wants to sabotage Nord Stream 2 without any doubt. That's going to be central tomorrow, I predict. Your thoughts?
I'm not concerned about, well, whatever they say, it's all about propaganda, fear porn, and their agenda. That's all they're going to tell us is their agenda. Their agenda is to destroy and dismantle the United States, kill our natural resources. They've already, you know, depleted us of our reach and a grasp of energy and independence, you know, cutting down, pipelines and gas and oil and see all this increase and everything. All this is playing in their hands. You know, it's really a hot mess. And COVID isn't going away. What we're looking at now is their whole COVID. They just opened the door. They got all these digital IDs, ID 2020, digital passports, health passports. They're all, you know, vaccine, whatever you want to call it. It's all down to the same thing where every portion of your life will be on there, from your grades in kindergarten all the way to your credit score, what you ate for dinner, your criminal record, your health. Everything is going to be on these digital passports. There's not going to be a stone unturned. And of course they want to tie that into the financials to where they can control, you know, what you do spend, so on and so forth. Now there's a transcript out there, and I don't know how legitimate it is, but I just listened to it last night. That's allegedly between Putin and Biden. Biden calls and says, "Hey, Vlad, President Putin, we got this situation in Ukraine," and Putin keeps cutting him off. And at the end of the transcript, it goes, he says, "Well, I'm the president of the United States," and then Putin cuts him off again and says, I hate to disrupt you, but, you know, you're the president of nothing. This call is finished. Goodbye.
Well, the president of nothing.
Okay. That's what we're looking at. It's all show. It's an act.
Well, I do largely agree with you. I did receive a message from Bruce S. the following: "Everyone who's pro-Ukraine is literally a useful idiot for the Rothschild family." I think you'll find a lot to agree with here. Heir to the Rothschild family, Nathan Rothschild today wrote to members of the British government giving his view that Vladimir Putin is the most dangerous man since the defeat of Hitler, with Xi Jinping a close second, and explained that Ukraine is an essential piece that we cannot afford to lose in the geopolitical chessboard. The heir to the Rothschild fortune argued that Russia must be excised from the international banking and economic system. We must bring Russia to its knees through any means possible to send a strong signal to the Chinese and to protect our global system of norms and liberal values. We must be under no illusions. If we allow Vladimir Putin to seize Ukraine, it will send a signal to our enemies, Iran, China, and North Korea especially, that we will do nothing when faced with an onslaught of horrors. Bear in mind, he's got a vested interest in maintaining the status quo and preserving, you know, the pandemic for the Rothschild to expand their power. If Nord Stream 2 is allowed to go forward, Germany and Russia together are going to emerge as an economic colossus. Europe is going to be emancipated from dependence on the U.S. for protection. The military industrial complex is going to wither away. NATO is going to disappear. In many ways, what's going on here is for all the marbles. Brew, your final thought.
Well, take us out. It's end of show.
I'm glad you called, Brew. I'm very glad you called. Thanks so very, very much. In effect, therefore, Bruce concludes, our current path or lack of military action means our global order is dead. This is still the Rothschild speaking. Don't let yourself be deceived. Those who are pro-Ukraine are useful idiots for the Rothschild. Thank you all for listening today, and I welcome your support.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The perfect triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the perfect triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle. The Perfect Triangle. With Perfect Giuseppe Triangle. From the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict.